Begin Podfix Network transmission in 3, 2, 1.
Hey everybody, this is former WWF Light Heavyweight Champion Gilbert, brother, and you're listening to the Greetings Guild Podcast.
Just realized that people can see me across the street. Oh, that's fine. It's not like I'm doing anything terribly embarrassing here.
Hey, what's a neighbor watching? I'll just redo of Healer again.
Is that tits with no head? Well, where do you see what he's watching now? It's like a monster made out of tits. Just the whole thing. It's just boobs. Space Dandy. That's why I don't do roommates anymore. Imaginary neighbor that I just created.
Oh, here's something I'd like to open with.
What?
I watched Oppenheimer a couple weeks back, and I've been on like some of this like History Channel kind of binge, where I'm watching documentaries on the Manhattan Project and on Einstein and like a whole bunch of other stuff. And as I was going through this rabbit hole, I came across something that might help with. I make fun of your phobia of black holes a little too much, but. I found something that's probably going to make you feel a little bit better.
What's too much? It's weird and funny as hell. Keep making fun of it.
It is. It's yeah. Perfect. Everyone assumes that black holes are like this giant vacuum where they're just sucking things in left and right, left and just. But I was seeing this thing by Neil deGrasse Tyson where he said, last time I checked, E equals MC squared. So something is only going to create the amount of gravitational force based on its mass. And black holes may not be massive in size, but they're massive in density, which, you know, they're just, if Jupiter was bigger, it would have a bigger gravitational force. So that's black holes have the equivalent amount of gravitational force. They don't just go around like slurking shit up like they're a prostitute on OBT.
Yeah.
You like that? Yeah.
Thank you. Well, yeah, that's why whenever how do I explain this? Whenever you see people try to visualize and I don't mean like in movies and stuff, but I used to have one of the Time Life books that would talk about like a cosmic physical phenomenon and things like that. Whenever you see like a black hole visualized, none of the stuff is going into the apex. It's always swirling around it because it's mimicking the idea. There's a theory that the Milky Way itself is just a swirling cluster of heavenly bodies that are like slowly melting into a black hole, that the black hole is actually in the middle of the Milky Way. So
gravity, I think the last thing that was proven was it's not really sinking into a black hole, but it's similar to how our solar system is revolving around the sun. It has enough gravitational force to keep everything in line. So that's what they believe is the center of our galaxy, is another black hole doing the same exact thing with all that massive.
Right. So it, essentially, it's not sucking the stuff in, but it is its own, like, what do they call this?
Centrifugal force.
No, it's an inverse transference of mass. That's the phrase I was trying to look for. So when you're talking about, you know, a black hole can only be created after a star goes white dwarf, right? After a star like gets so big it explodes, but that gravity has to go somewhere, so it collapses in on itself and creates a pinpoint sized singularity that retains the entire mass of the star that exploded before it. So it's not like it's sucking stuff in. It's just that gravity well is still retains its previous size, but there's no matter left to subscribe to it. So it pulls in or begins to take in whatever matter begins to find orbit close to it, or find purchase close to it. Now, I'm trying to say this because, you know, having such an obsessive fear of black holes, I read a lot about them, but I'm also fucking stupid. So those two things. So those two things aren't really compatible with each other when it comes to explaining this, but you get the idea, right? It's not like a black hole is just like this perfectly round fucking Hoover of destruction that like completes it, you know, like fucking the corpse of John Candy starts barging into a Burger King during the zombie apocalypse. It's just basically super it's just basically super potent gravity without the matter to without the resistive matter there, you know, like we're used to, you know, living on Earth and stuff. Thank you for coming to my fucking TED talk. Now pull your pants up
Green
and get out.
Podcast.
What's that?
You're gonna get a pair of guys. They're not exactly Rhodes scholars. They're more like Rhodes drinkers.
We're not Rhodes scholars. We're Valencia Community College scholars, and that's the best you're gonna get out of it. Aside from the dude that made the Wizard of Speed and Time, which is
we're the smartest guys on our block, and it's a very large block.
I'm pretty sure I'm not the smartest guy on this block, or any block for that matter. No, I'm pretty sure that like even when I was living in Wymore Grove, I wasn't the smartest guy on the block. I was, however, one of the most unarrested dudes on that block, so I'll take that. Yeah. So that's how it opens. We talk about black holes again. But you were watching something. I'm sorry. It was completely derailed.
It started with Oppenheimer.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Which I kind of enjoyed, and I remember somebody was asking me, so how would you describe it as boring? I'm like, I mean, I wouldn't burp, but I could see how some people would see it's boring, but at the same time, if you have like a quasi fascination with the subject, then yeah, you'll be hooked in because it's really good.
Did they ever talk about Buckminster Fuller in the movie?
Who was he? Because maybe.
That sounds like a big no. He was a theoretical physicist who didn't actually have anything to do with the Manhattan Project, but he was also a military-industrial consultant on a lot of things because his ideas were so fucking wild. I spent all my brain cells trying to explain the black hole.
You're spent.
But he makes for really good reading material, and I highly suggest you look up the Wikipedia article on him, as well as find any books you can about him. He's fucking nuts. But he was like 1920s nuts, so he dressed real well.
There was a ton of characters in this movie. What was his name again?
Buckminster Fuller.
Buckminster Fuller. Because they pretty much went into kind of a quasi-detail of, like, everybody who was involved with the Manhattan Project and, like, the Pentagon people behind it and and some of these, like, political senators or whatever that tried to derail him later in life. I'm not seeing any of the actors with that listing, so...
Okay, probably not, damn.
Yeah.
Honestly, if you're going to have, like... If you're going to have that kind of a character in your movie, then the movie might as well be about that character. You know what I thought was kind of ballsy was what was it, The Current War? Did you ever see that?
No.
It was advertised as, like, the conflict between Thomas Edison and Nikola Tesla. And Nikola Tesla is played by Nicholas Holt. He was in, you know, Fury Road and X-Men and a bunch of stuff. But Tesla was like a supporting character in that. And he had like a total runtime of maybe 10 minutes. The entire movie was actually about Edison versus Westinghouse. And it was relentlessly fucking fascinating. So like after I saw that, I went down the rabbit hole and like what that patent war was about. And the movie was a little bit, I mean, this might be personal bias speaking, but the movie like bent over backwards to make Edison look like not an asshole because history kind of reflects differently. But they didn't really try to make anyone, as a matter of fact, Nikola Tesla himself kind of like came off the worst of it because he had a thing for you know, buying fancy clothes, I guess, back in the day, and they really honed in on that. So I was kind of wondering if there was some sort of like an Edison Moms Society that was like behind the funding of this film. But it was otherwise really pretty cool.
I have seen a couple of not documentaries, but kind of
biopics.
They were probably closer to documentaries, with some acted out portions of those two, Edison and Tesla.
Westinghouse or Tesla? Okay,
Tesla.
Yeah.
Both of them, and the millionaire philanthropist that they worked with.
Yeah, yeah, it was pretty fun shit. It's funny that Benny Batch Cumberbund was in at least two of those that I could think of. He was in The Current War, and was also in The Imitation Game, which was about Alan Turing, which is a goofy fucking movie. I wouldn't recommend
that. I did see
one.
That, yes.
Yeah, that was a silly ass movie. I like the idea behind it, but some of the dialogue in it was just, it made my skin crawl. But yeah, if you're into cryptography, then it's a fun little slice of code cracking history to get into. But I would stick to the nonfiction books on that.
Yeah, I really didn't like how that particular movie it was him trying to decipher this way to get through the German code, so he builds his own thing. And that's only about half the movie. The other half is revolving around his social life and how the government feels they should tell him to live and everything. It's like, oh, come on.
Yeah, that was really silly. Cracking the code to Sieg Heil was pretty funny. But I swear to God, there was a part of the movie where I laughed. And there is when you're delving into that kind of heavy-handed subject matter, you really need to bring your A game when it comes to dialogue and character genes. Because there is that one scene where he looks at Keira Knightley and go, "Is it becomes I'm a homosexual?" And I was like, "Oh my god." Did you just say that?
You went full B-52 there.
Fred Snyder would have made a more convincing delivery, though. That goes without saying. And I don't have anything against, ex-Benedict cucumbers, but the guy's a great actor, obviously. I mean, I think he's carrying the most of the remaining MCU on his back alone, because Tom Holland's not having anything to do with it anymore. But they gave him so fucking little. Well, wasn't No Way Home his last Spider-Man movie, or is he doing another?
I haven't heard about any finality of any kind.
Oh, I thought that was it, because he was tired of it. But
he's 19.
That's a hard job. Yeah, yeah, he's 19. He's getting a little long in the tooth. But yeah, obviously, the guy's a good actor, but that movie gave him fucking nothing to work with, zero in the way of material. Him or Keira Knightley, come to think of it, they both kind of suffered on that. But I don't know. I have been wanting to make time to see Oppenheimer, but it's just I know it's Nolan doing some heavy lifting, and
yeah
it's yeah. And it's still 3 hours long, right?
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah,
it does go pretty quick if you're invested in it. It will go a lot faster than you quickly assume.
Probably. It's got a haymaker of an ensemble cast, so that wouldn't be an issue. The trouble is I have to find a fucking day to watch it. Yeah, so yeah. I actually got to see, I got lucky a couple of weeks ago. Actually, I don't know how much luck has to do with this. I think what happened is that January ended, and then I didn't have as many days of freelance this month, so I was able to actually fit in some actual rest days. And I saw I saw The Machine, the Burt Kreischer movie.
Oh, God. I sat down, watched it just for, let's see where this goes.
You know, did you enjoy it? Tell me that first.
The movie itself?
Uh-huh.
You know, I turned my brain off and I was like, okay, let's just watch this stupid movie and see where it goes. And the only real problem I have with the entire movie was at the very end, because the actor who played his dad,
Mark Hamill, yeah,
not him, not anything he did, but they throughout the movie they kept saying, Hey, come visit our businesses. We have three locations in Southwest Florida. It's three businesses in Southwest Florida. I'm like, okay, Southwest, that's a weird area of, but I know Bert Kreischer is from Florida, so all right, sure. And they kept saying three locations in Southwest Florida. And then at the very end of the movie, they put up like this fake little commercial that looks like it was shot for Iguana Mia or something down in Cape Coral. And then they put up the three locations, Tampa, St. Pete, and Clearwater. I'm sorry, those are not Southwest Florida.
That's not Southwest Florida. That's the Gulf Coast, you fucking poser, Bert.
That is the Suncoast. That is the Tampa area. That is definitely not Southwest Florida.
That
was my biggest problem with the entire movie.
It's like, that's not even close to Lee County. Get the
fuck out. It's not even Sarasota.
You're not Florida, man. What, like, what airs are you putting on here? trying to aim for legitimacy from being from the worst parts of an already shitty state.
I mean, I'll say Clearwater. Okay, Clearwater's kind of nice. St. Pete, I would stay out of some areas. Tampa, why would you go? I mean, the aquarium, sure, okay.
Dolly Museum. Now, Clearwater's pretty great. But, like, he was talking about Southwest Florida is a very specific area, especially to people who live in Southwest Florida. It's like, no. Once you get above Sarasota, then you're not talking about... You're out of the wilds.
Yeah.
Above Sarasota, okay? You can actually walk on the beach and not stick yourself with a syringe. That's not Southwest Florida up there. Once you leave the Yucatan, you're in relative safety. That's not Southwest Florida. I like the movie. It was like a solid action flick. You know what was surprising about it, though? It wasn't funny. It was like so dry. I mean, at the beginning when they're talking about like how he doesn't get along with his daughter, I felt like that was a little bit of it was self-indulgent. Yeah, sure. But they leaned heavy into the drama and shit. And then once they began setting up, you know, all the globetrotting like. Spy game hijinks and stuff. It was like that felt legitimate. They were like, "Oh my god, this is what an Indiana Jones movie should feel like." Yeah. like location shooting, even if it's not legitimate, it feels like it, you know?
Yeah, for a movie that was based off a comedy sketch, it wasn't exact. The comedy was hitting at in the twos.
Yeah, it was very strange, and they kind of like tried to pour on the gas at the end when they turned him into like a drunk Superman, but it was just like. You guys have already had like an hour, like a 90-minute like tear of pretty solid action before this. this is unnecessary. So it was like I guess if I was a film critic, I'd call it like uneven. But it reminded me a lot of another like really old kind of janky action movie called Avalanche Express with Lee Marvin and George Shaw, which was also solid if a bit hammy. So I was like, this is cool. This is great because now the millennials have their own Avalanche Express, and every generation ought to have one of those for them, pop culturally speaking. You know.
Yeah. Previous, what did we have? Pineapple Express.
I think Pineapple Express was millennials Cheech and Chong, but
yeah.
But yeah, an action movie on a train is what I'm shooting for here. And as much as I love the Lone Ranger, that wasn't going to be it. But yeah. I got to see The Machine a couple of nights ago. What did I fucking watch? I must have left a huge impression. I saw The Empty Man, which was not like the comics at all. It's still pretty solid, but they decided to do like a Midsummer thing at the end where, oh, we were planning all of this for you from the beginning. Okay, get the fuck out of here with that. Damn it. Oh well. Totally caved in the discussion here. but yeah, like, no, it's like I don't get a whole lot of time to watch movies nowadays, much less play video games, read, and do all the other shit that I used to do. But it's just like, well, at least I'm not sweating out bills now. I can deal with that.
One thing I do want to talk about, there's two animes that I've been watching. I know you've been watching one of them.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
The first one, it's on Netflix. Dining in Dungeon?
It's Delicious in Dungeon.
Delicious in Dungeon, yes.
Yeah.
That is, that's like quickly becoming one of my favorite anime. Not not in the top five, but it's still it's pretty up there. I enjoy every episode that's been out so far.
You know what was kind of funny about that one? I didn't enjoy the first episode at all. I was like, well, this is a hit. I'm going to watch this for lunch, whatever. And then I saw the second episode. I was like, when did this get good? And then the third episode, you could tell like Imai Ishii actually directed it. And I was like, and that's when I started watching. And it was funny because like what I thought was happening at the beginning of the anime was just the gimmick, like nothing but a gimmick. And it was this. It was your typical like food porn anime, right? Where something happens and then somebody has to like make a dinner like right after that thing happens, and then they show like in painstaking detail the thing that they just made with like a little label beneath it, like we can't tell. So they were like that, but we're gonna make it disgusting. That's what Delicious in Dungeon is. It was a clever idea, but I think that like when I saw the first episode, I was like, I'll read the manga. I'm not really missing anything here. Or,
Is there a manga?
Yeah, it was based on a manga.
I ask as if I should have known the answer to that already.
Oh, sometimes they aren't. Sometimes they are original animations.
That's... How rare is that?
It's very rare.
Yeah, I would imagine. Usually, like, anime has this unwritten rule where if they're going to put food out, it has to be the best-looking thing in the show by leaps and bounds. Like, there's a particular studio in Japan that does only food, mm-hmm. and they have to be the very best. I mean, these are the Mozarts of food animation.
Yeah, anime food has that quality about it that makes you believe that like you could just bite into the cell that they painted the food onto, and it still tastes like what it looks like. But was it Studio Ghibli that created that, or not created but established that trope? The hyper detailed.
I don't know when
report.
It started, but I know they were definitely one of the purveyors of it. Uh-huh. One of the things is like whenever these animes come up where food is the subject matter, mm-hmm. it's a straight hit or miss. Sometimes it's a great series. Sometimes mm-hmm. it is just awful.
Restaurant at the End of the World is probably one of my favorites.
Yes, I absolutely love that show. I know there's two
or
seasons.
To Another World, not At the End of the World. That's the name of a Douglas Adams novel. Come to think of it. Yeah.
All the stories in that one are interesting. It revolves around food, and they're mm-hmm. constantly introducing new characters and everything. But then you have shows like Food Wars, where it's god awful. Where one kid, he's like this. This character who's absolutely the best at everything he does, and he doesn't even have to. It's like, I'm going to think of how to do this. It's the day of the competition. Look, I've made this 7-star meal. Fuck mm-hmm. me now.
I don't remember that episode, Bob.
I mean, there's no trial and error. There's no. I've screwed this up. Oh, this doesn't work. No, he is the food kitchen Jesus of anime.
Was that one of the episodes that Fox cut from the Saturday morning lineup? Food Wars was an anime. I'm sorry, I'm thinking of Fighting Food-ons, which was pretty enjoyable, but it was like, it was Yu-Gi-Oh! But with lunch, you know? And it was pretty plain to see who they were marketing that towards.
Food Wars is, it's like a this character who's in a cooking school, and it whenever it comes to like these schools in anime, it's like, you have to be the absolute best, or you're a low ranking nobody, and there's like all this royalty and hierarchy above you, and you're just wiping the floor out of them with zero preparation whatsoever. You're just absolutely the best, the greatest that's ever lived.
That's the shonen formula. You got to start from nothing. You got to start in your F class or rank F or whatever it is, and become triple S by the end of the season or the end of the show. Or in One Piece's case, not have an S rank anywhere.
And just keep going.
Just keep
at it.
That was another thing that I saw. The live action One Piece on Netflix.
Oh, I want to see that.
Oh, because it was odd because I totally would not have watched it. But when I was living over at the other place next to the Titan Tower, my housemate there had a Netflix account, so I let him put it on my Roku when it was over there. And I finished off a couple of things. Like, I think there was like some episodes of Comey Can't Communicate I hadn't finished. Well, I watched some Cuphead.
Another great show.
Comey Can't Communicate?
Yeah.
Oh, that fucking tearjerker shit, man. It kills me. And obviously I saw Delicious in Dungeon over there as well. But he was like, dude, you got to see the live action One Piece. And I was like, this is going to... Because what's the cliche? That if there's a live action... if there's an anything adaptation of a popular anime, it's going to suck like black holes. Not to come back around on that, but...
I mean, I still think Cowboy Bebop was pretty damn good. It just, Netflix never gave it a shot. And you're always scarily quiet.
We're going to address other things in the room before that. Because I don't want to fill up whatever time we've got to talk tonight with me complaining about shit.
Okay.
So there was One Piece. There was, what was the one that gets a lot of shit?
Avatar.
Avatar's getting pretty well hammered too.
The new Avatar. I mean, obviously the M. Night Shyamalan and Ding Dong movie was not well received, but
it seems like the people that are getting into the live action show are also bringing along with them a little bit of baggage, because nobody liked that fucking movie, and it's bizarre as to how that thing could have even turned out, because he was the producer, he was the creator of the show. So that's like a tacit admission of like at least two things: that A, he just came up with the idea and then gave it to a bunch of people that knew what to do with it and had nothing to do with it from there on after, and B, that he didn't even understand his own creation, which is a hell of a thing to have to shoulder as an artist, you know?
What was it about his movie that people just didn't like? That it strayed too much from the original animation?
Don't know. I never saw the movie, and I've only seen a couple of the episodes of the cartoon. So that's why I'm not like super, you know, heated about anything about it. I don't know that much about Avatar. I only know more about Korra than Avatar, because I used to have a Tumblr at one point. But
you know where I've learned the most about that
what
universe is on TikTok. There's a channel called Absolute Kyoshiism. That
really?
It's where all the Avatar characters are talking to each other, and they're all arguing with each other, and they're constantly like throwing jabs and verbal spouts with each other, and it's hilarious to listen to, because the voice actors they got for that are actually pretty accurate.
Nice.
That is the extent I know of the universe, is through that particular TikTok channel.
Is through references?
Yeah.
Well, that's more than I've got. I can only think that like people railed against the movie because they tried to condense previously existing narratives into a 2-hour runtime, and whenever you attempt to do that, it never works out. So,
yeah.
So I don't know. I'm guessing. Shyamalan tried to do something with the show that it was not meant to do. Like, he didn't stick with an original like one shot or anything. And that's always a mistake, because there's like, when you've got that much time to build your setting, it's going to be details upon details upon details. You're going to have like a Dagwood sandwich of lore by the time you're into like the third season. And by that point, Shyamalan was like, oh, I made something popular? Well, fuck, I better capitalize on this. And then he watched maybe, I don't know, 1.5 seasons of his own show. I was like, all right, that's it. We're going to make a movie out of that.
I think it's a problem when you do a not exactly a retelling or a retake, or like I guess the best way to put it is like an extension of something that already exists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you deter too far from the original material, mm-hmm. that's where the fans start turning on you. I mean, some of the best examples is like Lord of the Rings. Amazon started doing the Rings of Power series.
Yeah.
And the creators of that series literally said, yeah, we have this written material. We're not going to ignore it, but we're not going to follow as a constitution, basically.
Yeah.
We're going to go at our own rate. That way, it's like if people sitting down to watch the HBO shit. Big show on HBO.
Succession?
No, not currently.
Not currently. Oh, Sopranos?
No, fuck. In between that. The biggest show ever made. Why am I drawing a blank on this?
Game of Thrones.
God damn it. Yes.
All right, there it is.
Yeah, when they deter from Game of Thrones, people are like, no, that's not. When we have this and it says blue and you give us this and it's red, no.
It's not the same thing.
It's not the same thing. It deters too much.
All right, so that was the first thing that stuck out to me about Cowboy Bebop. So what I think happens with projects like this is that somebody has an idea. Somebody in the Rings of Power's case wanted to do epic fantasy. But we've got all these IPs, okay? So one of two things could kind of like lead a large-scale project like that into what it eventually becomes. And that's it being a little bit too close to something recognizable, so you just go ahead and decide to co-opt the property itself, or B, getting funding for the project and then trying to pitch it as like an extension or a continuation of an IP that this other entity already has, mm-hmm. so that you can get production support from them. So what I think in the Rings of Power's case, and I know very little about this project too, because again, it's Tolkien, is that they wanted to do epic fantasy. They wanted to do it with a completely separate cast of characters, but somebody would decide, hey, that sounds a whole lot like Lord of the Rings a little bit, or B, they were like, hey, can you make that sound a little bit more like Lord of the Rings, and we'll give you the money for it. With Cowboy Bebop, I think somebody had the idea to make Quentin Tarantino in space, but which is not fucking what that show is. And somebody was like, well, that sounds a little bit like this anime that came out that a lot of nerds talk about all the time in very, you know, passionate and fucking the wet-lipped gasps. Maybe you could make it a little bit closer to that, and then we'd have a project on our hands. And they're like, all right. That's all I got. Because most of what I saw of that show was a lot of shit that, like, that if Tarantino was worse, he would try to do. Sorry. I'm also like, I have a very touch and go relationship with Tarantino too. Oh, that was one of the other movies I saw, by the way. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, that was good. That was probably the best thing he's ever done, because it's like unmistakably Tarantino. But unlike most of his other movies, and yes, I'm roping Kill Bill into this, he like found some sort of. He found some sort of like emotional restraint when it came to him, his like, you know, trademark self-indulgent, you know, violent fantasies and shit. For one thing, there's only like two really violent scenes, and at the end, of course, it's like just an explosion of violence, but it's all purposeful, which is fucking crazy to see in a Tarantino movie. But a lot of it was like character building. So much of it was character building that, as a matter of fact, you could have condensed the entire plot line into the last 20 minutes of the movie, which is its one failing. But the dialogue was good. The two leads were amazing. The revisionist idea behind the movie was not only clever as fuck, but also really, I don't want to say like optimistic, which is also not a Tarantino trademark. It was like the dude just like grew up in the 3 years that it took for him to write the screenplay for this, and it was just like, fuck, man. Imagine if the rest of your movies were this damn good. Now, I don't hate his movies, but like whenever I do like them, it's usually because it's like some sort of it's indulging me in some way. Like Pulp Fiction's really obvious. It's got dark humor. It's really twisted and shit. Jackie Brown's an obvious one too, because it's all like the Bronze Age of network television. But this one was something fucking else. And I couldn't even tell that it was like as long as it was. So yeah, if you ever get the time, go ahead and set aside a day for yourself to see it.
I will add that to the list. So I did want to mention the first anime that I was really into was Delicious in Dungeon.
Okay. Oh yeah. Sorry.
The other one, that's what we do. We'll circle back.
That is, yes.
The other one I'm watching that I really like is Frieren, Beyond Journey's End. Beyond Journey's End.
Yeah, you'll hear me typing here in a second because I have never heard of that. Beyond Journey's End?
Yes. Frieren, F-R-I-E-R-E-N.
Frieren, Beyond Journey's Edge, and that's on Crunchyroll.
Yeah. Basically, Crunchyroll, it's a really good fantasy about this elf who is a mage, and it takes place, it's not an isekai, one of the few non-isekai shows out there, but it is a fantasy.
You finish first.
Yeah, it is a fantasy where she's a long life character elf, where like a month is just a blink of the eye to her. So, and it goes through like the first two episodes, it goes through like 80 years where she, it actually, the great thing about this show is most of these shows, they build up as like, oh, we got to defeat that main bad guy. We got to take him out. And towards the end of the season, they finally do. No, this starts off like after they beat the main bad guy. So like all the lands are celebrating the party.
Yeah.
And she's just walking around like very emotionless, like a Vulcan almost.
Yeah.
Just like whatever. And like watching all of her friends grow old and die around her. It wasn't so sad because she was kind of disjointed from reality, but it just like life goes on. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to the next thing. And she's constantly wanting to collect these weird spells. Mm-hmm. Not like, oh, I want to learn how to do fireball or learn how to do invincibility. No, she wants to learn, how do I get stains out of these clothes? how can I see through people's clothing to see if they're armed?
It's a practical one. You think that more people would know. Really?
Right. Yeah. I mean, your first thing is, oh, she wants to do it because she's a pervert. No, she wants to do it to see if you're packing anything to hide. And
yeah.
She like has this really forward thinking, low creativity level. And she's given like this human apprentice to raise. I really enjoy this series. It's really, really good. It makes you like step back. And it's like, man, like they'll decide, okay, they're going to stop in this village.
Mm-hmm.
Her human companion is like, let's stay here for about a week. Meanwhile, she's like, oh, let's stay here for 5 years. it's nothing to her. Like a month is just a blink in the eye.
I can't stay here for 5 years. I've got shit to do. Madhouse is the animation studio behind it.
Oh, yeah.
Legendary studio. Fuck. I actually thought that they weren't doing anything anymore. That's pretty cool.
yeah, I think they have 22 episodes. And I've been knocking that out left and right. I absolutely love that show.
That's fucking cool. I will probably be seeing it upon the high seas because I'm limiting myself on my streaming services right now. For the most part, like those bases are covered on Hulu and. Surprisingly Prime now, but Crunchyroll's been getting away with some shit. Oh, and by the way, God rest Funimation. They were the last of the first generation holdouts of
what a crazy ride that was with them.
Animation localizing, yeah. That's so odd though, because now there's Discotech, and they're not necessarily new. I think they had established themselves like maybe about 12 or 13 years ago, but like back in the 2000s, you had like so many of them kind of like vying for import territory. You had ADV, you had Pioneer, and they eventually became Genion, and you had next to Funimation. There was also Broccoli Core.
Okay, so help me out with the history here. And please correct me when I'm incorrect. We started off as like the biggest streamer of all anime was Crunchyroll.
Yeah, but they used to be the biggest pirating site of anime.
Oh.
And then they went legit, so you know they couldn't get sued by the feds.
Ah, okay. So some of the studios that they once they were legit, they started working with some of these studios, and some of them, such as Funimation, was like, wow, you guys are making money off this. We're doing our own thing. We're taking all of our shows off Crunchyroll. Am I right?
I still don't know how that partnership works. Because at some point... Okay, so at some point, Crunchyroll remained independent. And I think there's somebody watching me across the street. What the fuck? Oh, that's spooky. Hang on a second. Oh, they just saw me. Ah, ha, ha. Well, not anymore. Later. Oh. Yeah, sorry. That was weird. I like if somebody's...
Are you on the ground floor?
No, I'm three stories up. So,
okay.
Yeah, like across the street, literally, it's a lot of other buildings of equivalent or maybe like a story up above me. But all of us are at like eye level in various degrees. So,
like how far away?
I kind of saw somebody like sitting at the table, just looking into my window, and I'm looking right at them. And I could be imagining things, but I thought eye contact was made, and she wouldn't stop looking. And I'm like, oh, I don't know how to deal with this.
it wasn't like, oh, I'm just staring off to space. I just happened to be looking at you. It was
She could have been staring out into space, but she could have been having a fucking stroke for all I know. But I was just like, nope, that's triggering my paranoia. So
okay, you've seen Rear Window. You know how this goes.
Yeah. Did you know there's a board game of Rear Window?
How would you play it?
I don't know. Just thought I'd throw that trivia out there since you mentioned it. It was from Funko, the Prospero Hall. Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
Crunchyroll history.
Crunchyroll history. So Funimation didn't actually like form a partnership with them. They were eventually like bought by Sony, and Sony had more or less been responsible for the last, I guess, half a decade or so of their operation. And then they folded this year because Crunchyroll's just doing it all. And
didn't at one point Crunchyroll or Funimation buy the other one? Or
no, it was just a working relationship. Like Crunchyroll and Funimation would have would share libraries. There was the VRV thing also, mm-hmm. if you remember that.
Oh, Verve, yeah.
Yeah, but the funny thing is that like Funimation helped Crunchyroll launch Verve, and then about like a year, I think about 6 months after to a year after after that was established, they just ditched. They're like, yeah, we're done. We're out of here. And then Shudder followed them. And I was like, well, what am I paying for?
Oh, that's right. They were like a big old group thing, weren't they?
Yeah, it was a pretty good deal when you had all of those streaming services at your disposal and whatnot. And it was like $6.99 a month for that. That was pretty nice. But then these other people were like, yeah, we know why you're subscribing to this. And yeah, we want our cut.
Why piracy's on the rise.
Yeah, well, because it's convenient, the dubs don't suck, and Crunchyroll is an American... Oh, no, Sony owns Crunchyroll now.
I think I've heard that.
Crunchyroll was first founded in 2006 and was eventually a for-profit video upload and streaming site that specialized in hosting East Asian content. They were pirates! Just say it! God! Some of the content hosted on Crunchyroll included versions of East Asian shows that had been subtitled by fans. Crunchyroll's
really?
Capital investment of $4.5 million from the venture capital firm Venrock. The investment drew criticism from anime distributors and licensors Bandai Entertainment and Funimation as the site continued to allow users to upload unlicensed copies of copyrighted titles. Oh, I didn't know about that. They were a venture capital supported piracy site for a little bit. That's cute. let me see. Now, I want to know how Funimation fits into this. Because they're obviously not the victors. Funimation is, current tense, weird, is an American subscription video on demand over the top streaming service launched in 2016. Okay, all right, hold up. So Crunchyroll LLC in history. In the early 1990s, Japanese-born businessman Gen Fukunaga, I probably mispronounced that horribly.
You did.
We're going way, way into the past for this one. Funimation signed a deal.
We don't have to go before the towers fell.
Yeah. Well, this is a little bit after the towers fell. See, that's why it's like so fucking murky to me. Company was founded. Okay. Yeah, that's where it goes back to Texas. I see. The one thing I wanted to know about Funimation itself was what role it played in developing the Texas-based like localization industry, because ADV and Pioneer were also based out of Texas, and they shared a lot of the same talent pool. And who was the other the ones that like localized Lupin for a long time before Pioneer got a hold of them? It wasn't Manga. Oh, I can't even remember.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Eh, damn. Well, the reason I'm making that distinction is because the Lupin, the voice cast that does the dubs for Lupin now, as we know them, were originally the Pioneer people. But after Pioneer shuttered, this other company got a hold of it, and that was the dub group that was led by Sonny Strait, who provided the voice of Lupin. So it was like both pretty great casts. But like the Pioneer one is like fucking unkillable, because they not only like let them they not only had like crazy talent, but they also let them kind of like play fast and loose with the dialogue in the show. And that was at a time where people just kind of like wanted to get a laugh out of each other instead of be, you know, fucking prickly. And it worked. It like really fucking worked. Honestly, if it wasn't for the Jinion dub of the Red Jacket series, I probably wouldn't have gotten into the character to begin with. But that was an interesting time. But there's way more history here than I was actually counting on. I thought it was just going to be like, yeah, a couple of nerds got together and started dubbing over Japanese cartoons instead of getting laid, and then they found out a way to make money with it. And you know,
it wasn't like Ghost Stories.
The rest is history. Well, Ghost Stories is like its own little... its own little legend, so I'm not going to get into that. Yeah.
And what a legend. I was so thrilled when I turned on Amazon. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, Ghost Stories. Oh, is this the original animation with the original dub or what? Mm-hmm. Apparently, I didn't know the dub that we all know and love. Uh-huh. That was the original dub.
That was the only dub, yes.
Yeah. So we're watching, I'm like, oh my God, mm-hmm. What have I found?
Gold. I don't care. It, like, there's some sort of like a weird purist streak among anime watchers now that'll like fucking have to rail against that show. They hold that show up as an example of like localization reach going too far. And it's like, fuck you. Learn to laugh every once in a while. You still got the sub. The sub is still intact. Fucking take, just tuck it in a little bit and fucking smile, will you? Fuck. Get down. But.
Yeah, I mean, just by mentioning dub, I'm sure a lot of people are like rolling their eyes at me. It's like, you know what? I actually prefer to watch the anime. The animation isn't that great, I'd rather watch it, and I'm able to take it in better when I can. And the other thing is a lot of times the jokes come off better when it's in English.
There's a limit there. Like, I'm probably like one of the sub only dudes that you know now, just because like, I don't know, the dubbing community has gotten like fucking bizarre over the last decade. But I kind of like stick to the subs, and for the most part, the subs do the job well enough. That, and I kind of like when after the first time of hearing like an original audio track, I think it was for Space Dandy. Then I was kind of like, I don't know. For some reason, I got hooked on it. It seemed to be a bit less. It seemed to put what I was hearing like much closer at arm's length. Somehow, it's tough to describe, and I don't want to try to describe it, because at some point I'm going to start sounding like a snob. But the thing about dubs is that like a lot of them nowadays seem like they're being done by people who want to get in the show business but don't really want to take this path to do it. Whereas back in the day, it was nerds. It was just dudes that really love anime that wanted to bring it to another audience and have fun while doing it. It was all material written in good faith. And nowadays it's just dudes like jacking off in front of each other. And it's like, I don't fucking care. But not to put too fine a point on it or anything, but there I think was a drop in quality of dubs ever since like the years of Cowboy Bebop went on. Although, what was the one? Dagashikashi had a really good dub. I enjoyed the shit out of that one. That was really good. But you got a lot of classic dialogue out of the older ones, and.
Well, even some of the more recent ones. I started watching this one show, Psyche K, on Netflix. I was watching it on the sub, mm-hmm. and the way they were portraying some of the jokes. It's like the character would say something, or like one of the side characters would say something, and then the main character would step in and like contradict him under his breath. Mm-hmm. But it happened in such a flow that just doesn't work when you read it at on text.
So yeah.
Like, but what? I don't understand what they're trying to do. And so then I turn on the dub. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I get. Oh, that. OK, that's a great joke. I love that. For some reason, it just doesn't click with me when I'm reading it.
Well, that's if they transliterate it, or did they adapt it for, you know, English speakers? Because a lot of times Japanese puns don't work for us. And that is when a localizer would do better to step in and try to make it more digestible for a domestic audience. But a lot of times nowadays, they don't even put that much effort into it.
Well, it was kind of like how in Konosuba, like there was this running joke where the side character was like, Kasume, Kasume! I am Kasume.
All right. When you first saw that, did you watch it with did you watch it in the original, or did you watch it dubbed?
I don't remember. I can tell you I did watch it both ways, but I think it's because I got the joke however I saw it the first way.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to see how that joke would translate in the opposite way. So I probably watched it in the dub first, probably.
That was one of the shows that I think that was the show that got me to not like part-time dubs and subs. That was shows. It was like, oh, just do subs and see what happens, because the way the line was delivered was, like you said, Kazume, Kazume, and in the original audio before that character continues talking, you hear Kazume under his breath, "Hi, Kazume des."
Yeah.
And he does that every single fucking time. That was, I believe, a nuance that was lost a little bit within the dub, but that's like the least of dubbing's problems right now. Fucking, how did we get onto the nerd grievance hour here?
We were just talking about animes.
Which one were you? It was a Psyche K. You were talking about which one before that?
For what?
Oh, we were talking about like Funimation and
yeah. The
what eventually
of,
happened?
Like, Crunchyroll and all that.
Yeah. So we were talking about ghost stories. This is how we got onto it, because people kind of like rail against that as if hating something that loudly makes them like, you know, more of a weeb connoisseur of some sort. And it's fucking bullshit. But I was at work the other day, and somebody was talking about anime isn't something that people talk about a lot at a sports broadcasting network. So,
oh, when, yeah, I would imagine.
when you overhear it, you kind of like, you know, you hop in, and somebody was like, "Oh my god!" So they were talking about subs versus dubs. Come to think of it, shit. All right, so one of them mentioned Ghost Stories, and I was about to, I'd be like, "Oh shit, here we go!" And they were like, "Yeah, Ghost Stories is like the worst fucking dub I've ever seen." And I'm like, "Ah, oh."
That's when you slunk down.
Yeah, I literally, I had my hand up like this, like I was wanting to jump into the conversation like immediately. And as soon as I heard it, I was like,
"Yeah, just slowly." Like Chris Farley slowly bringing the hand back down, hoping no one saw it up to begin with.
That's exactly how it happened. I was like, phew. The deflation could be like visually registered. But it's a bit of a shock to the system with like a lot of younger people too. I tried to get my nephew Eli into Archer. It wasn't happening. It was just like too edge for him. And
really?
Ghost Stories, weird, right?
Yeah.
Because you've met him. And his sense of humor is pretty distinctive, but yeah, he was just like, I can't get into this is too weird. And I was like, all right, well, you know. And whenever you show, like, I mean, the Ghost Stories dub is nothing but Edge. A lot of it is admittedly empty Edge, and some of it doesn't seg well into each other at all. But fuck it. We used to make the Batman dubs, so what are we going to judge with?
Yeah.
Exactly. That's why it was, like, our shit, because we were like, you know, this is totally something we would have done if we had an anime we didn't know what to do with. If we were, like, in this business, and we were about to close down, and we had this, like, one property that was left for us to finish, and the subs are already complete, there's nothing else for us to do except lay down a dub track, fuck it, you know what, we're gonna do it. It's gonna be, like, an entire, like, what is the, what is it, Hellsing Abridged on YouTube, or Dragon Ball Abridged?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We totally would have done the same fucking thing.
Oh, yeah, the Abridged guys, the DBZ, or the, what's their channel?
It's Four Star.
Team Four Star, yeah.
Team Four Star, yeah, all right.
Yeah, the stuff they do, I think, is just freaking hilarious. I got really, I almost, like, levels of depression when I found out they can't do Dragon Ball anymore because it's just too big of a hassle. Their channels got literally taken down too many times because of it.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, oh, God, you guys do. So- I mean, their voiceover work is really good. The writing is absolute. The Van Helsing Abridged, I think, is freaking hilarious.
Yeah, I still need to watch that. It's just the one time that I sat down to watch it over at your house. I was like, oh, this is actually like 2 hours long. Jesus. I'll get to it one day. Promise. But,
well, it was because you hadn't seen the original yet. You wanted to knock that out. I was like, all right, that's fair. That's absolutely
fair.
Well,
no, they actually dubbed Ultimate Helsing, right? Not the first version of Helsing?
I didn't know. I don't know the difference.
There's two. Yes. So there was one seasonal anime based off of Helsing. I believe it was like the first 8 volumes of it. And it ends with... oh no, I forgot all the characters and places and shit. No. it ends with their rival organization attacking Helsing headquarters, and then it has like one of those really open endings. That's
it is ultimate. Yeah,
it is. It's like it, you know how like an anime that doesn't like catch on with an audience kind of just abruptly ends and there's no resolution whatsoever. It was one of those. And okay. Up till that point, it was fucking solid. Like, the soundtrack, the OST is, like, legendary. And the dub was pretty good, too. But then I want to say it was either, like, at Pioneer or it was somebody on this side of the ocean was like, hey, how about we give you this much money to take another shot at Helsing? And somebody did it. So they kind of stuck a little bit closer to what actually happened in the manga because by that point, they had a bit more to build off of, like an actual resolution to the arc that they were making the first anime alongside. And I've heard that like from a bunch of people, it's pretty much better, but the music's totally different. So you don't have like that weird like gothic funk bluesy sound to it. It's like much more epic and bombastic and orchestral and things like that. But that was basically like an early example of like an anime redo on something. And sadly, I've never gotten around to seeing it. But and because I work all the time, I don't think I ever will.
I know that dance.
What a fucking pisser!
Surprised I've been getting in some game time that I have been.
Have you, Bob?
Have
what
I?
What you been playing? Go ahead and make me jealous.
Oh, boy.
Go ahead and have me rip out my hair right in front of you on camera.
Well, you know me. I can't bounce between one game to another. I have to play one game, and I will play it till the freaking edges of the game itself wear down.
Yeah, you're a finisher. That's noble. I'm not going to judge.
I have the problem where I turned on this game that I've been playing the other day, and it logs how many hours you've put in.
Yeah.
And that made me feel like I got to put this down for a bit. And then I immediately picked it up and I played for another 3 hours or so. So I've been playing Baldur's Gate 3.
Uh-huh.
And yep. God damn, that's an addictive game. I mean... If anybody wants a recommendation of how you should start D&D, this is how you should start, because it is the best way to introduce you. Because when I got in back into D&D, like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, something like that, I was actually very apprehensive because I don't know anything about like the structure of the play. I don't know anything. I mean, Magic was just completely over my head. I know nothing about spells and anything. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, I'll be a monk who just uses his fist. He's very low weapon usage, very simplistic. And I kind of like got into that. And it's more, when you do the tabletop, it's more story based and character building and role playing and everything like that. Baldur's Gate will teach is like the best teacher when it comes to some more of the finances or the minutia, I guess. Yes, thank you. Fuck.
I think maybe. I mean, there's a lot to D&D.
There is. So I have my modifier, and then I use my spell, and then I'm also carrying this cantrip. It does that. All that stuff just intimidated the hell out of me. It's like, I don't know what the hell I am doing. Until, I picked up Baldur's Gate 3, and I still have not finished the game. I'm very, very close. I think the next thing I have to do is beat, like, the final big boss guy, and then I'm done. I've logged 250 hours.
That's you enjoy that game. That's good.
that's like near obsessive levels. Like, has your family been missing you or something? I'm surprised it's not a warning. It's like, do you have any loved ones that care about you?
Daddy talks in his sleep about a bear. I don't know. That's the only thing I've heard about Baldur. I saw when I was over at Jay's house. I saw him playing through like the first hour and a half, where he's on some sort of like a squid ship, and there's a lich there, and he's having to try to start up some machinery and whatnot, and I was like, man, this game is fucking dense. I'm probably never gonna lay a hand on this. So the fact that you've gotten like 300 hours into it is telling me that it's like, oh, he's only like a quarter through the game. That's no good deal.
The part you're describing is like the very beginning of the game.
Very, very beginning, yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, that was funny too, because he let Victor play it. And I'm like, you won't let your kid play Fallout, but you'll let him play. Okay. All
right. there's some aspects of the game where if you turn left, it like can change the entire aspect of the game.
Yeah.
If you turn right, it's like, oh, you get these three characters as part of your party. It's like, god damn it, I knew I should have turned right then. I missed out on a lot of. I definitely can pick this game back up and play a completely different playthrough than the first time around.
That's awesome, because like natural runs within the digital game space are really difficult to come by. There's like a community dedicated to doing repeated runs in Witcher 3, and literally, aside from the fact that you can't sleep with both Triss and Yennefer, well, you can, but you're not. That's difficult to explain. You can, but you can't at the same time. It's like the illusion of choice sort of thing. It is very much like an A to Z sort of an experience.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you can go ahead and like, I don't know, try to go over to like Fife Island first before finding what's her fucking face, the blonde witch or whatever. But it's still gonna like result in the same ending more or less. No, actually, it's not. But the thing is that like, there's a way to get everything that you want throughout the course of a single run. But Baldur's Gate 3 seems to be like, it doesn't punish you nor reward you specifically for wanting to join. There's no way to get everything within a single run. It's a lot like New Vegas. New Vegas like that, yeah.
When I first bought the game, my wife was a little... She wasn't upset, but she was a little perturbed. Like, why are you spending money on this game when you haven't even picked up the Switch in the last year and a half? I'm like, well, first off, our son is constantly on it. So, and between the three of us, he's got the Switch more than anyone else. And
so
let him have his fun. I'm going to play this fantasy game in my office alone so nobody can bother me. And then when she looked over my shoulder a while back, and I had like 175 hours in at that point, she's like, Jesus, you really got your money's worth out of this thing. Like, that's how the game should be. It should be,
yeah.
You get an hour of play for every dollar you spend, in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's your time per penny spent quotient. I mean, obviously, the value you extract from that sort of an experience is going to be, like, deeply subjective. But the fact that how much was Baldur's Gate 3? That hit the 60 tier, right?
I think that was I want to say 60, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was 70, because that's a lot of gameplay and there's a lot of stuff in that game.
Yeah, I spent about that much on Tears of the Kingdom last year too, and it was like, yeah, I got all I needed out of this shit. But when I first played Half-Life 2, I got that in the orange box. That was $20. It's a bad example. What am I?
Oh, several presidents ago.
Yeah, it was several presidents ago. I could lie and say that I got my money's worth out of Fallout 4, but I haven't played that yet. So I just bought it. I bought that shit for $80 so I get like a plastic replica of a Pip-Boy. I haven't booted that fucking thing up once.
You know what? It's all perspective. If you feel like you've gotten your money's out of it and all you got is a tchotchke, then hey, then there you go.
Oh, I definitely got an $80 chunk of plastic out of the deal. But hey, whenever I like pull my head out of my ass and try to get into something like epic and new, then that'll be there waiting for me. And I'm pretty sure I'll get as much out of it as I got out of Fallout 3, which I did pay a lot of money for, and Fallout New Vegas, which I got like 3 years after launch, so I only paid like $15 for it. Now I'm trying to think about like the last large scale game that I got where I actually did drop a chunk of change that was kind of short-ish, and it's not coming to me because I guess people have been pricing themselves upwards pretty well.
Yeah, unfortunately $70 is the new normal.
$70 is the new normal now, but I'm trying to think about like the last time I felt not cheated, where I felt like the content of the game was not equivalent to their asking price, but I still walked away from the experience happy. Other than Spider-Man plays pretty much like a $40 game. Dragon Quest Builders 2. That would probably be it.
Hmm.
Yeah. For one thing, that's an open-ended game, though. So that might not even count. Boy, this conversation went nowhere quick, didn't it? Fuck.
That was my biggest worry about Baldur's Gate 3 was like, mm-hmm. I know it's the third game in the series. Do I have to play the first two? Nope.
Oh, hell no. I wouldn't recommend completely doing different that story. As a matter of fact. Yeah. Like I thought I had to dig into Witcher 1 and 2 before picking up 3. And what actually made me decide to start playing 3 were the amount of people that were like, no. Don't.
Like, gatekeeping you from playing the first two.
Yeah, I was like, you will not want to play 3 if you play a second of the first two games.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, the first one didn't age really well. The second one people consider to be like a bridge between Old Witcher and Wild Hunt. And Wild Hunt is like, I hope I'm not like indulging in hyperbole with this, easily one of the best fucking open world games I've ever played. So there was a lot for both of those to live up to. That's also
the biggest, the biggest deterrent for me is when I'm playing a game is if I hit that mental wall, if I hit a point in the game where I frustratingly can't get past, I will put it down and not pick it back up for a while. Kingdom Hearts was like the best example of that.
Oh, fucking Kingdom Hearts. Jesus, yeah. God.
I hit a wall. I'm like, I'm not enjoying this. I'm going to put you down. I will come back to you later. And that was several years ago.
Well, I figured it out. I figured out how to play it. And so I totally get what you're saying, by the way. It's a steep game. I'm not saying it's necessarily hard, but there's like aspects of it that are impenetrable. And the AI is frustrating as shit. The worst thing about that game, I think, Did I actually beat Sephiroth? Yeah, I did get to the end. Okay. The worst thing about that was that, like, afterwards, I wanted to get into Kingdom Hearts 2 because I was already riding off of the high of the first game. And I was just like, well, you know, there's going to be, like, more esoteric, and you have to get used to it. And I was like, if the story's good enough, then that will push me along. I'll be sufficiently motivated to get into the nuances of this new setup. That was not there. 100%. It was not, like... Like, what was like motivating me was to you know, eventually find my way over to, like, the Pirates of the Caribbean part of the game. I didn't even make it to that. I was just like, this is stupid. What on earth is happening? I don't understand any of this. I'm not Sora. Wait. All right. You know, there's only one dude in the industry that can get away with this shit. And Kojima is not part of this whole setup. And that's readily apparent, so we're just gonna have to drop it for a bit, which sucks because Chain of Memory is fucking awesome, but guess what, that's just a retelling of the first game.
So, oh really?
Yeah, Chain of Memories is clever as hell, by the way, if you've ever played that. I think do you have like one of the newer platform copies of the Kingdom Hearts series, because I think they like combined. Okay. Chain of Memories actually came out for the Game Boy Advance first. And then they upscaled it for the PS2, and then they upscaled that for, like, more modern consoles to be included within, you know, the Kingdom Hearts 1-3 compilation or whatever. So it was a collectible card game, and it was not turn-based. It was all live. So all of your moves, all of your spells, that was all – you built all of those out of a deck. And it was, like, several decks. You had, like, three of them total. So when they on the GBA, it all made sense because you could see the entire, like, battle, the play field. But when they up-resed it, of course, it had to be 3D like the other games. And that repositioning of your character perspective really got in the way, and I couldn't enjoy it as much. But on the GBA, it was, like, pretty fly. It was also easy to cheese in a lot of ways. So if you don't like that, then I guess you'll find less of it than I did. But yeah, it was a really clever idea back at the time. Shit, I was trying to think about, like, the last game that I hit a wall with. But, well, no, you were about to say it. It was Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
Fuck it. All right.
That's not the. I mean, I think I had that with Witcher 3 as well. It's like I ran into this area where, oh, it was one of those situations where you turn around. Oh, mm-hmm. There's an enemy who's, like, a 5 times stronger than me.
Did you do Death March?
I don't know.
Death March is the... It is the supposed nightmare difficulty of Witcher 3. But
when no, I think it was, like, one of those things where I was close to a swamp or something like that. I turn around and there's a witch there. Just completely unprepared for... Completely railroaded me. I was like, I think I'm going to stop for a few minutes.
Wait, was that the ghost next to the well?
I don't think so.
No. Oh, okay. All right. Because that was back in I think White Orchard. Yeah, I remember a lot about that game. Oh shit. the thing about The Witcher is that I wanted to play it on Death March, but because before I bought it, I was reading about, like, because I'm a completionist, I was like, okay, well, what's the best path to take when you want to try to get these different achievements? And I want to have the best Gwent deck eventually, so what places do I have to visit?
Figured out Gwent.
Gwent in Witcher 3 is fantastic once it clicks. Before that, it's a confusing fucking mess.
Okay, but yeah, for me, it was a confusing fucking mess.
Well, the idea behind Gwent is not really to, like, It's not like actually head to head in a way you expect it, because we think head to head, we'd think of a dueling card game as like Yu-Gi-Oh or Pokemon CCG, something like that, or Magic, right? It's usually like we're trying to diminish the health of the other person, but these cards all serve as both defenses and buffs and offenses. But Gwent is basically math. It's just math. You're trying to out-math the other guy. And everything that you do is, let's say that the other dude throws down, throws down a bunch of cards in the first row, which is your infantry row, right? You, would have a card that you can put down into your ranged row, and I believe at the back there's what did they call that? It's where all the catapults and shit go.
Yeah, I don't know if you're actually asking me because I have no idea.
Yeah, I know. There's like verbiage here that I'm skipping over, but you throw down somebody in your ranged row, and that ranged row will only affect the value of the cards in your opponent's infantry row. So it's a lot of this. You build your decks around what you think your opponent's deck is going to be. You only have to lose to them once in order to figure out what that is, and then you adjust your deck composition accordingly. Strategy? Yeah, you could call it that, but once you have your build set, there's not a whole lot more strategy for you to go forward with. And the day that I like actually figured out how to beat an opponent in this game, I was just like, well, all they did was try to bottleneck the shit out of them. But that's what it is. That's what Gwent is. So Gwent in Witcher 3 was really brilliant stuff, because they were able to balance all the cards. It was just a fixed pool of cards within that one game that they had to consider, and that was it. Gwent, the collectible card game, the free one that they have, that shit's a fucking mess. Because they fundamentally fixed the lane rules. There's only two instead of three now. And they started doing that thing with that Hearthstone did that eventually got me off of Hearthstone, is that like they would introduce a bunch of cards and then retire a whole bunch of cards, but these cards were just the same as these cards, but these are now unbalanced, and now we have to get rid of and retire all these other cards, and they have to keep doing this, so you keep buying more card packs. So that was goofy and stupid, and I wasn't having any part of it. But yeah, there is like an actual like threshold of understanding with Gwent in Witcher 3, but you have to, again, be motivated to do it. And if there's a lot of other stuff about that game that was like keeping you at arm's length, fucking don't worry about it. Absolutely not. What they don't tell you about the rest of the game that you have to learn in Death March is that you can't just fight the monsters that you're hunting. Preparation is easily 75% of victories in that. So you have to develop your oils. You have to develop your genomes. You know, the little skill tree that you can like assign different traits or different genetic traits to yourself with. Like you could set yourself up as like a basilisk slayer in one way. You know, you're invulnerable to like slowdown effects, things like that, but that's not going to do well for like a vampire you might have to chase down or something. So you have to completely like respec your entire build before you start doing another quest, and you don't really get much of that until you have your ass handed to you literally by the first five ghouls that you fight in the game in the tutorial. And that's what happened to me. I was just like, why do I keep fucking losing? This is awful. It sucks. It's stupid. And, you know, the first thing was like, well, I am playing on Death March. That might have something to do with it. But then I was reading, you have to have your Necro Oil. And you have to use your Silver Sword, not the Iron Sword, which is for humans. And you should also start sidestepping a lot. Not like escape rolling, sidestepping, because ghouls only attack straight. So I remember those three things, and all of a sudden I beat them all without getting touched. And I was like, oh, so I have to think about this shit? Huh. All right, well, hopefully I get used to it. Anyway, yeah.
I remember that burned me a few times.
Yeah. Like, it was really demoralizing, though. It was like, these are the first five fucking things I have to beat. This is terrible. But yeah, it was once you got like those nuances down, then it like opened the hell up. And well, I did stop playing it eventually because, you know, I didn't have access to my computer for a while. Oh, guess what I got behind me?
What do you have behind you?
I got my PC.
Yay!
Yeah, I'm going to start. Well, hopefully it still works, but I'm going to start putting that together tomorrow. Hooray.
I am shocked the one that you helped me build is still kicking.
Hey, you know why?
Why?
It's because I helped you fucking build it. That's why.
Damn straight, yeah.
That's it, yeah. I can do very few things really well, and that's one of them. Are you looking forward to playing any of this stuff this year? Because, oh my god, I got a laundry list the size of my forearm.
Let's talk about that next time.
Next time? Oh, we hit
the... Because maybe I'll be done by Baldur's Gate 3 by then.
No,
because it takes us 2 months to put out an episode.
nah. Like, how much? Okay, so when did you start playing it?
I want to say short, like a week after our last episode, which was beginning of the year. Yeah.
Oh, no shit. Okay, well, maybe. That sounds like you're doing some serious time on it. Well, I'm kind of ashamed.
Well, yeah. So yeah, next time we'll what we need to do is like games we're looking forward to for this year, on top of the idea you had for this year's Nerd Playoff.
Oh my god! Yeah. Do you think it's still going to be relevant though? I mean, I'd love to do it because
it's March Madness. Yeah.
Because it's not only like a cool idea, but it's also like a little bit of like Cretan's Guild lore.
Oh yeah.
You know, because it's like shit from like the before times.
In the dark days.
The Southwest Florida arc, as it would be called. Well. All right. Anyway. All right. Well, let's get out of here so you don't go to sleep too late. I don't know. Are you like doing daily gigs now, or is it
Oh no, I actually have a real shift. Aside for last Saturday where we had a 5 a.m. wake up call or a 5 a.m. showtime.
Good Lord.
Showtime? Showtime, yeah.
When was your call time?
That was the weird thing. Usually we need like 6 hours of prep time before the show starts.
Uh-huh.
They only gave us 2, which is really unusual.
Yeah,
but
I'd say so.
I guess they were thinking, it was like, oh, these guys probably, they can't handle being up that early.
Uh-huh.
Like, bitch, I did local news for like 20 years where I'm up at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. I can handle it.
We did national morning show for a little while.
Yeah.
And for a little while, I mean longer than I wanted to.
Well, yeah. Longer than, well...
Dude, over here they were like we were doing like there was a big to-do in the world of soccer last week, and we were having to do extended shows, and they were like 4 hours long and nobody wanted to do them, and I'm like, you little shits,
that's a Monday night for me.
You don't even know what we had to do to earn our bread.
Oh my god. Yeah, some of those days I'd come in and it's like, morning drive. Mm-hmm. 6 hours long.
Oh, merch show.
Okay.
Whatever.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Because usually we would go for 2 hours and then it would repeat for like another 2 hours or something like that.
Yeah, we just load up on Red Bull dark coffee Boilermakers before sitting down.
Guess what? We're going to have to change batteries during the show. Okay, cool. Okay. Dude, hey, Lauren, I need to reach into your dress so I can change your equipment.
Oh, that was... Ah, never mind.
She was a professional. She knew what I know.
Nobody's talking smack about the ELT. Fuck that shit. Holly, on the other hand...
Different
thing altogether.
She'll take the equipment off for you.
That's an my zone there. That's playing with fire. That's being fueled by poop.
You just remind, like, before we sign off, I did want to point out real quick. You mentioned LT Lauren Thompson. Mm-hmm. There's a wrestling show called Wrestle Talk where they did like the greatest promos of all time.
did you do an interview for it?
No.
Oh, okay.
No one asked me. Nobody asked me. But it would have been very... I would have absolutely loved to chime in. Mm-hmm. But everyone was thinking, oh, the pipe bomb, that's the greatest promo of all time. And there's like 3 panelists. One said pipe bomb. The other guy said pipe bomb. The third guy, he said Steiner Mass. It's the greatest promo of all time. I mean, you say Steiner Mass, people know it almost word for word. It represents... a wrestler, it represents a promotion, it represents it, the memes itself. Steiner Maps was more memorable than anything else ever. Raised hand?
Yeah. Can I teach? Right here, teach.
Yes, teacher. Yeah.
All right. What's the pipe bomb promo?
The CM Punk pipe bomb?
Oh, I don't remember that one.
where he hijacked Raw, sat down with a live mic, and he just aired all of his grievances.
Okay. I saw that. Well, I saw that on the CM Punk documentary that the WWE made, but
yeah.
Why was it called the pipe bomb promo?
Because he was delivering a pipe bomb of opinions.
See, that just looked to me like he was bitching into a microphone.
He was, yeah. A lot of people forget that when it comes to programming, 95 to 98% of everything you see on TV was supposed to be seen on TV. Everyone's like, oh, this must be real. Oh, why aren't they cutting his mic? Because it's a scripted thing.
Because it's bullshit, yeah.
Yeah, it's wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, people shoot on each other all the time on that show. So, whatever. Steiner Math, without a doubt, would be one of the greatest promos ever cut for at least two reasons. A, the amount of memorization that had to go into delivering that promo. B, the fact that it was Scott fucking Steiner that had to memorize those lines and deliver them and not fuck up once.
Well, he's
okay,
crumbled, but it was still a clean delivery.
It was still a clean delivery, and he didn't choke. If he like fat-lipped a couple of lines, fucking so be it. He still hopped right back onto that track and rode that thing into the canyon at the end. Back to the Future 3 style. And see, like, even if it was like him ad-libbing it all, that's more impressive.
Whoa,
honestly.
I wouldn't go that far. But at the same time, I remember I asked Lauren about that one day as we were just bullshitting, shooting the shit. And I asked her, it's like, what was that like, that particular segment? She's like, honestly, I was kind of scared of Scott, so I just let him do his thing. He said the guy doesn't have an off switch. That's him all the time. Like, yeah, I can absolutely believe it. But she had absolutely no idea that particular promo, even several years ago, was one of the most memorable promos of all time. And she was completely clueless. I pulled up Twitter. I was like, look at this. Steiner Mass. Like, she had no idea the impact that she was involved in.
Steiner Math has fucking t-shirts from people that had nothing to do with TNA.
Yeah.
That's how it hit naturally, virally, mimetic, quantum zenith. There's no fucking question that, like, CM Punk bitching into a microphone for 5 minutes was going to be able to eclipse that. I don't even remember half of the stuff that he was talking about. I guess he like called out Triple H or something.
Oh, he called up everybody under the sun. John Laurinaitis, Vince McMahon, Triple H.
Yeah, like, well, who fucking cares? It was just like another wrestler's bitch fetch. I mean, it might have been like more ad-libbed than the usual shoot promo, but it was still just a shoot promo. And great, you know, CM Punk's awesome and stuff, but whatever. Steiner Math, though? There are people that talk about Steiner Math at the place that I fucking work. That, like, okay, a couple of them might watch wrestling, and one of them at least worked there. But, like, there's people there that are, like, 20 years old who only know, like, soccer and will still, like, fucking, like, bag on Steiner Math every once in a while. I can't actually come up with any other promos that maybe a couple of, like, Macho Man classics, like Cream of the Crop and whatnot. But, like...
Yep, that one and Dusty Rhodes' My Big Fat Heinie.
Yeah.
From back in the day.
Personal favorite that I've never actually seen for myself, and I should look it up on YouTube one day, is I only know about this because Jay used to like reference it like all the time, is when Al Snow was supposed to fight Road Dogg, and he grabs the mic and says, D-O-G-G, you made B-O-B do the J-O-B at the P-P-V, or something like that. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe a couple of like bombs from the Rock and Sock Connection were pretty good. But other than that,
I mean, Kane Dewey, that's up there.
Kane Dewey's up there. Oh no. I'm kind of like hopscotching over one in order to like, you know, hype up Steiner Math. your mom's a nasty bastard. No, you're a nasty bastard and your mama said
your mama said so.
Okay, that's at least
that was
five.
Less of a promo and more of a skit.
Yeah, it was very, yeah, I know it was like super skitty at around that time, but like, yeah, that's still up there though. But
yeah.
Yeah. but fucking Steiner math. That's fantastic. Did the other two assholes come around or what?
Oh, they thought he was making a joke. It's like, what do you mean? Like, because they were more shocked that Pipe Bomb wasn't his number one pick. It's like, what are you talking about? Pipe Bomb's not your number one pick. And then he just went into detail about why it's the best promo of all time. Mm-hmm. And they were just like, their jaws were on the floor. They couldn't explain it. And they were, he had them trumped, basically.
Did they never see it?
See what?
The promo itself.
No, they knew it. They were very much aware of it. They just didn't see it coming as being his number one.
Well, dude knew what he was talking about.
And yeah, and after that, it's like everyone start chiming in and say, yeah, you know what? That is a better promo than the Pipe Bomb.
Not to bring this like forcefully to a full circle, but how cool would it be? I'm honestly a little bit disappointed that like nobody's like edited Steiner math into Oppenheimer. If there are any scenes that take place in front of a blackboard, it should happen. It should have happened already, actually.
All right, there's not one of those, but I have seen one of those videos where they type out everything you say, and then it adjusts and it turns and. Man, it's I can't describe what I know. The particular style of animation has a name to it, and you'd probably know it, but I can't name it. But someone has done that for Steiner Mass.
Oh, Metafonts. Okay.
Yeah, I, that sounds right. Yeah.
Nice. Kind of like what they did with the Zombieland intros.
A little bit, yeah.
That's awesome. All right. Well. Anyway, so the next show we'll be doing our like next bracket and talking about like any of the games that are coming up this year. I'd really like to do that too because this year is like looking fucking fat for digital indulgences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. So the third the guy who's probably gonna hopefully he'll join us for this because it'd be real shame if he's not there for our first non-J. Nerd playoff. No, he's got to be. We got to drag him in. Anyway, he is Jay from Square Pigs on YouTube. He just did a tier list of Simpson games. He nailed it out of the park. He was perfect. Go watch it. Square Pigs on YouTube.
Yeah, I like it when he does his rankings.
Yeah. I am Skipper Bob's on Skipper Bob's Breakdowns YouTube. We are going to point out that there is a link tree to all of our socials and other media you can find on the description. Join our Discord and continue the discussion.
Yep. And I am Corey. I do nothing. I am nobody. I don't have a YouTube channel. I have almost no social media presence to speak of. And as of the end of the show, I am in the wind. Until the next time.
You're like a fart in the wind.
That's right. I was kind of going for something a bit more like intimidating, like, you know.
Don't keep it classy.
Espionage, like
don't
spy.
Smart now. No. Anyway, we are part of the Podfix Network. You find them podfixnetwork.com.
Very much like a finely atomized toot. You're right. Damn it.
To all of our followers, new and old, we say, welcome to the guild.
Here's my calling card.
This was a podcast of the Podfix Network. You can check out more shows like it at podfixnetwork.com.
Not all dogs and cats.
Is that Felt like something was missing there.
Yeah. What, dignity? We've never had that.
No.
Why start now? Fuck.
When's the last time it felt like we were missing any dignity on this show? It's like, anytime somebody, when Mark McEwen came onto our show, we're like, dude, there's too much dignity on the show now.
I think we tainted his career.
What if we people, I feel so bad if that was true. We would love to have like signed you on for the Today Show, Mark. You're a broadcasting legend, but you did this podcast back in 2015.
Yeah, it's like a black mark on your career there, buddy.
The Cretan skill. Don't you know that's a derogatory term for people that suffer from hydrocephalus?
Oh, Christ, that's going to haunt me forever, isn't it?
He looks ruefully into his makeup mirror and goes, "Cretans!" Now he wouldn't do that. He's awesome.
Yes, he is very cool.
Although it is very curious as to why we haven't seen him doing anything recently. I hope we had nothing to do with that.
I hope he's enjoying life as he should be.
Yeah, I hope it's a natural retirement and nothing that was forced upon him.